From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The pansies are pooped, and I'm scratching my head as I always do around the time when spring heats up for good on the turn toward summer. What will I put in the pots? Now, in the hopes of avoiding staggering around the garden center without a plan, staring at those flats of petunias and calibrachoa and coleus and marigolds, I called for help. I'm feeling daring, so I specifically called Timothy Tillman, a former colleague of mine at Martha Stewart Living, who's now a horticulturist at the much-heralded Untermeyer Park and Gardens in Yonkers, New York, just minutes north of New York City, which has quickly become a destination for gardeners, a getaway where visitors are wowed by bold contemporary plantings, including ones in containers, in a dramatic, historic setting. So welcome back to Away to Garden, Timothy. I need help.
Oh, Margaret, it's great to be here. Yeah. Thanks, and I'm happy to lend whatever I can.
Prevent me from staggering around the garden center.
Exactly. Well, I've been staggering around the garden all day in this heat from this week.
I know.
Ridiculous.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Heat and no rain. But maybe it'll rain before long. Ha ha. So I noticed on the Untermeyer Park and Gardens website that it's sort of a centennial for Untermeyer, for the property, because it was 100 years ago that Samuel Untermeyer hired Bosworth, William Wells Bosworth, the architect and landscape designer, to create this great garden for
him. Exactly. Bosworth, the same landscape architect that did Kaikit for the Rockefellers.
Right.
And I think Untermeyer went to him and commissioned him to design, quote, the grandest garden in the world.
Uh-oh.
And so, yes, I believe their conversations began at that time, and it was a little bit later in the teens that they started executing that plan.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a small centennial in that partnership. And we hope to celebrate the centennial of the garden's initial completion in the next couple of years.
Sure, but it's kind of interesting that it's right now that, you know, this 100 years ago that they were making the first plans, and here you are again. You've been there now how long?
I'm starting my fifth year.
Oh, you're kidding. I thought it was like two.
No, it's flown by, and we all are still in our infancy with the whole project.
Yeah.
And to be the first full-time gardener back in what was such an acclaimed garden at the time is just a thrill and an honor.
Well, we should say that the Untermeyer Gardens Conservancy, a nonprofit organization, is collaborating with the city of Yonkers to facilitate the garden's restoration, so it's kind of a partnership, and really amazing things happening. We'll talk more about that later, but let's talk about pots, because like I said in the introduction, the pansies have had it. They're looking worse than I am.
No, all our cold season stuff is long gone.
Yeah, stretched up and pooped out. So, you know, let's just start where a gardener starts. Where do you look for inspiration? I mean, sometimes I found myself, and I'm always saying staggering around the garden center. I keep using that verb, you know. but, you know, like holding on to one thing that catches my eye, like, say, some coleus or a calipho with multicolored leaves. And I love this particular plant that you know, I've happened upon, but, like, what goes with it? So sometimes I'm looking for inspiration from something like that. But where else could we be looking for inspiration, or where do you look?
No, I agree that if you can start with a plant in the nursery, and it is staggering to walk into a nursery and not have a good plan, or if you have a plan and they don't have exactly what you want.
Oh, I know.
It's so easy to get disoriented in that situation.
Or they have one flat and you needed two, or it wasn't going to work.
Exactly.
Kind of,
I was at a nursery the other day, and I had my cart loaded up, my two carts loaded up, and I was working on a third, and I went back and noticed there was a whole flat gone out of my cart.
Oh.
I felt so bad I had to chase down the person that thought it was available still and take it back because it was going to ruin everything.
Yes, exactly. Because that's the thing, is it's not just having, you know, onesies. It's having the exact right number for each thing. Oh, my goodness.
Exactly. So that's where it started. But as far as before I get to that point, I think it really is color combinations
is
where I like to start.
Yes.
And again, to make whatever color combinations I'm thinking about work with the area in the garden and what perennials or woodies are there and how it's going to work through the year, either working with them or against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try to stick to color combinations of just one or two colors. I love monochromatic pots. A lot of times I'll just pick one color and work with that. We almost always forget that there's already green along with almost every plant.
Correct.
And so that's something to always consider. And so if I want to do a white pot or a silver pot or a purple pot, it gives me more flexibility where I can use that in the garden and what plants I can use too if I'm limiting myself to one color.
Yeah. Now, so of course, everyone's thinking, well, but the pots they sell in the garden center are pre-planted, what they call in the industry either color bowls or the latest terminology I think in the trade publications that I read is grab-and-go containers. And I'm thinking, I'm not grabbing and we're not going anywhere together.
No, that takes all the fun out of it.
Because they're like, they've got one of everything in them. You know, they're speaking of not monochromatic. There's like, you know, one begonia and one marigold and one, you know, one upright green thing and, oh, my goodness, and something silver spilling.
Collector's garden in a 22-inch pot.
Aha. Uh-huh. Right. Good. Well put. So you know what I mean. So you're saying really that it's going to have more impact. I'm assuming you mean it's going to have more impact if maybe we back off from that higgledy-piggledy thing.
Right. Well, I think so. And, I mean, I look at color closely and I think about color a lot, and I have a hard time using more than two colors in a combination mm-hmm. container, three sometimes. And I think it takes somebody with an amazing amount of talent like Marco Stefano
yes.
to actually put together like really rich, deep numbers of colors in a single pot or a lot of textures. And so I end up simplifying quite a bit more than Marco or some of those legends in the field.
The former director of horticulture for Wave Hill, where you also worked, preeminent longtime public garden in New York City.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're not going to go all over the place and have a rainbow in our pot. Do you ever look? I mean, I have sort of an orange color of trim on my very very dark green olivey, as dark olive as you could get and still be green and not almost black house. And I feel like sometimes I want to pick up on that. Like I wouldn't want to have. I don't think pastels like silver and pale pink and lavender would be a great thing at my place. I feel like vivid is good because the house is there in the middle of the garden. I mean, maybe that's too silly, but
no,
I look to architectural things as well sometimes.
No, the surroundings that you're putting in are as important as whatever combinations you might have in your head or what you've seen in a magazine. As funny as it may sound, and especially with container pots, I like to throw away my color wheel and my color theory charts and look at college football uniforms. I kid you not.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's always great contrast.
You're such a jock, Timothy.
No, it's not anymore. But, I mean, they're already well thought out color combinations. It's, again, down limited to two or three colors usually. And we don't have to think that hard about it. It's looking around for pleasing, bold combinations,
uh-huh.
whether it be the architecture and the paint on your house or your local college football team or a really interesting diner sign.
That's so funny.
To look for color combinations that really stand out, you can find those anywhere. And to put them in a container in a garden, there's no rule against that.
So do you have, it's May. Do you have, for Untermeyer, do you have a color combination or an inspiration in mind for pots for any of the areas of the garden yet?
No, I think we're going with the LSU Tigers this year.
We're going with the who? The LSU Tigers?
Right. So purple and yellow. And I started out with my tulip combination, which we just finished today pulling out our spring tulips, they went so fast.
Oh, it was horrible.
This season.
An aside on that, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but that's okay because I'm that way, I ricochet. I heard from our friends Glenn Withy and Charles Price, noted garden designers out in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, and they said to me today in an email that this was the first time in all the years they've been installing gardens for clients that many of their favorite varieties of tulips that they bedded out for clients did not bloom because of insufficient winter chill.
Really?
And now in Seattle, like in California forever, that's been the case, they are going to have to order pre-chilled bulbs that have had a fake winter,
Wow.
Yeah. So this is how much the climate is shifting. So speaking of tulips rushing by.
No, that's a very interesting.
Yeah, so anyway, sorry, didn't mean to. So the LSU, we're going LSU.
Purple
thing?
Purple and yellow.
Purple and yellow.
Which was my tulip combination
okay. This
year, too. So we used a couple double late tulips.
Yep.
If we're talking about tulips, one called Blue Spectacle, which is a peony. A lot of people refer to them as peony tulips.
Yes, I love them.
A great purple blue, and another one called Gold Rush, and then a lily tulip in purple called Purple Princess that came up above that.
And so now you're going to do that same combination in the pots.
I'm going for purple and yellow sort of for the full year. I think we're going to bed out in that. And then with the pots, though, that allow me to take those colors and pull them away a little bit. So I'll throw some oranges in as well and some other colors that would work good with that purple and yellow theme that we established with the tulips.
Uh-huh.
But we'll continue with our bedding scheme.
And when you say purple and yellow, I mean, obviously with the tulips, they had green stems and green leaves.
Right.
But when you say purple and yellow in the pots, can some of the yellow be coming from foliage and some of the purple be coming from foliage, or is it going to be all about the flowers?
Oh,
the
a great deal will be coming from the foliage. And I think really that's as important as anything with the annuals that we're putting in pots. We usually get a full season of bloom, but there are a lot of plants. I can't use enough coleus, and God knows there's enough coleus out there to choose from. There's one I used last year called Big Blonde.
Big Blonde?
Big Blonde. And she gets 2 to 3, she turns into a small shrub.
Wow.
With these really great, more yellow than chartreuse leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Will take the full sun. It loved it in the ground. It loved it in a pot. And I want to use some more of that to pull some of that yellow into the containers. That one even got to the height in a container where I loved the scale of what it was doing with some of the other plants, and I didn't pinch it, and I could see it going farther and farther away from its center of gravity in a big pot.
Oops.
But I still didn't want to pinch it, and then we had one good rain with some wind, and I came back in the next morning, and several of the big blonde were drooping on the mosaic tiles here at Untermeyer Garden. But they responded well to pinching, and they're such good growers. It's easy to use. And there's so many purple foliage plants
Yes.
out and around now, too, from the trailing sweet potato in purple, and it just goes on and on. All the alternanthras,
right.
I really like to use a lot of the different alternanthras.
I think that's one of my favorite kind of, and this brings up the sort of design, you know, the conventional wisdom of pot design is, some people say spiller, filler, thriller, or I don't know, you know, there's an upright thing, a spike,
right.
And then a spiller, something that goes over the edge of the pot and cascades, and a filler, the medium level element. So you're talking right now, like with alternanthras, for instance, which I adore. I love the one, I think it's called rubiginosa. You know, it's just, it has a little broader textured leaf, but it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of finer textured ones as well. Or the sweet potato vine that you were talking about, those are kind of spillers, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely spillers.
I like
those. One of the ones I can't get away from is one of the helichrysum, the licorice plant,
mm.
but it's called the cultivar that I've been using is Licorice Petite.
Licorice Petite. Mm-hmm.
So it has these tiny little leaves, and we've seen, and I've been using the helichrysum for a long time, but to find these with these tiny leaves and a much more dense habit, I don't even want to use the typical helichrysum anymore, the licorice plant. It just seems so coarse and doesn't take up as much space and leave so many gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one I use a lot. The trailing plectranthus
like
to use a
great
lot.
Great plant. The plectranthus are wonderful.
No, I mean, they just go and go and go, and they'll take it dry or they'll take it wet. And the tricolored variegated, they have a little bit of white and a little bit of yellow and a little bit of green.
Mm-hmm.
So it can work with almost any combination.
So
the silver one I can't use enough of, and I'm using it in the ground,
right.
too, is a Dichondra Silver Falls.
That's a beautiful plant, Dichondra Silver Falls,
It really is. And it here in spots, it almost acts like a perennial.
Oh, interesting.
And it seeds itself around a little bit, but it's a lot of fun to use. And in the full sun, it'll trail down to the very bottom of just about any pot.
So purple and yellow doesn't mean, even if you pick a football or a sport team kind of color combination like that, it doesn't mean I'm going to go out and buy 3 flats of purple petunias and 3 flats of yellow marigolds, and that is my thing. It means bringing those colors in many ways.
And that's something I think we as gardeners do too much. We talk about the purple and yellow combination, but, to throw in an unexpected dash of orange to go with that,
right,
or any other color that really works.
And you were saying the silver, for instance, which kind of cools it down and makes it and sets it off a little bit too.
Right. And again, if we're talking about foliage color or foliage shape, which mm-hmm. is just as important as the color and the flower color, all those sometimes they need to be united, even if it is only a small combination of two or three different colors.
So are there any sort of other, besides the sort of spiller, filler, thriller, you know, the three element conventional wisdom, as I said before, are there sort of other structures or designs of planting that you find yourself going back to, you know, you feel like work? I mean, whether it's dictated by the types of pots you're attracted to, the types of containers you're using, the shapes or whatever, or the settings or...
Absolutely. That one formula is pretty good, and, mm-hmm. and you can work with it on a lot of levels. But that's kind of the fun of containers and fun of pots, is that any of these formulas are almost there just to be broken. And because they are in a container, there's no permanence to them. They can be moved. They can be rearranged. So there's a lot of pots that I just fill up with a single plant. I like to use the Phormiums, for instance.
Yes.
Just all by themselves, the New Zealand flax. Other plants that don't really make good combinations would be, and we have a couple big agaves.
Yes.
Out in the garden.
So now you're talking very linear things, both the Phormiums and the agaves. They're like linear, spiky almost, very vertical seeming, or not exactly vertical, but upright.
Oh, very upright, very architectural, very structural. They work really well with pots for that reason.
And so you're saying that you could just have a pot that only has that. And
only has one plant in it. And
then
right next to where I just moved out some Phormiums, I put some Abutilon standards that I think I found in Copaig Falls.
Did you? You found them by the side of the road in Copaig Falls, New York? How could that have happened?
Exactly.
Did they live?
Margaret called me and said she had plants that needed some place to overwinter.
They needed to be adopted by a better home than I could provide.
Exactly.
So, and they're alive.
And they're alive, and we've just repotted all those up.
Aww.
And those are plants that I'll mix in with other pots like the Phormiums.
Right.
A lot of single pots and almost create an entire little border out of pots. This is around an architectural feature at Untermyer Gardens that lacks intimacy without pots and without some foliage on it. And to put some of these single plants in their pots, and it'd be a good chance to put some of the spillers on the bottom, or the alternanthras would be great just to act as a top dressing for the pot so you're not looking directly at the soil.
I like to use even things like bits of things I find around the garden, like sedum angelina, you know, scoop up a little bit and put that around the base of big architectural things, you know, kind of give it a little carpeting, so to speak.
You know? Absolutely.
Yeah. So sometimes you use found objects in the garden, found plants.
Found, right. Exactly.
So we have maybe 5-6 minutes left, and I want to, you don't just use annuals at all. Like some of the things you just talked about are not perennial in our zones. There are things that are tender and have to be stored over the winter, like we were just talking about the Abutilon standards and so forth. I mean, do you use so to speak, quote, house plants and edibles? And I mean, does anything go?
Oh, I think absolutely anything goes. In fact, I'm growing some ornamentals, not just ornamental, but I'm growing peppers this year that I'm going to use ornamentally.
Oh.
But there's certainly, and at home and for clients, you know, you can still grow a beautiful pot that the centerpiece, the thriller, is a cherry tomato.
Right.
And so I think absolutely anything goes. House plants, for sure. They're great in the garden. So any of the things from, you know, your typical corn plant, there's a whole bunch of dracaenas that are really beautiful plants that can look really good. Philodendrons from the house can look really good out in the garden. And even plants that aren't quite ready to go in the ground. Right now we had a weeping larix, one of the larch trees with yellow foliage that was donated to the garden last year. I haven't figured out where I want to use it, and so we put it in a nice pot, and we'll mix it in with our container display.
Yes, young shrubs and trees, as you say, before they're ready for their eventual place. Sometimes they can spend a year being really wonderful pot elements, that's for sure.
At least. So what plants you end up putting in the pots? And Margaret, there's even some pots here that I like a lot to look at, and I can't find the right plant. And I've been displaying them without a single plant in it.
Yes, to show off the pot. So, I agree with you. I like empty pots, and I have a lot of small pots, and I don't like to plant up small pots because they need to be watered twice or three times a day in the summer because they're small. But I have some beautiful ones, and I just like to make kind of these little arrangements, you know, around of these pots and just look at the pots, and that's okay too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful pot. There's no need to make a fight with a plant. Prominence.
So being daring as you are at Untermeyer and otherwise, it can lead to some flops. Any that you want to confess or things that didn't work or maybe some successes, some particular successes. Like last year, were there any big successes?
Oh, well, it's as far as in the pots, yeah. I mean, one thing that we're having a lot of fun at Untermeyer with is that area I was mentioning earlier where we use a lot of single potted plants with single specimen in it,
yes,
is around this really sort of barren, it's a small pergola, the stoa, but there's really no intimacy, but it has one of the greatest views in the entire garden, sort of soften that up, and creating almost a whole border on the steps leading up to the sitting area turned into what I thought was kind of a success.
So by staging some pots there, it kind of brought the whole thing down to a more intimate level and a destination level.
Oh, absolutely. And at the beginning of the season, it looked obviously like a big stack of pots on a flight of stairs. But by the end of the season or by mid-season, you could barely see a pot anymore. And it just was this wonderful tropical border going along the front of the stoa. So that really worked. But there's always flops as far as what doesn't work. Absolutely. There's plants that grow out of scale. I mentioned the coleus last year that I let teeter on the edge for so long. And I've had entire compositions when it got into the real peak time of summer. They were so robust and growing so well that they really just almost shattered. They fell apart. And at that point, you can, because they're in pots, you can move them out of the way. You can bring in new plants and redo it. You can add plants to it all the time. And that's, again, the fun of pots.
Yeah. They're
so flexible.
Yeah.
When you have big flops, and I mean, we're in gardening. We can always bury our mistakes anyway. With a pot, it's even that much easier. You can almost start over again, and you can certainly bolster whatever plantings you have there. And, you know, be prepared for flops. There's always flops.
So get the hand cart ready in case you have to wheel anybody who's looking a little past their prime out of the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, Timothy, I'm always so glad to speak to you. And, of course, on the website, I'm going to tell about how people can come and visit Untermeyer. Any particular things? You have tours on particular days of the week in spring and early summer?
We have tours on every Sunday through the season. Those vary for time of day,
okay,
so we can accommodate your schedule that way.
I'll give the links for info on that. Okay, good.
And we have our big fundraising gala coming up on June 16th at 6 p.m., and I think tickets are available on our website for that as well.
And I will be sure to give the URL for that, because that should be quite a night to remember.
No, it's a fun party.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Timothy Tillman from Untermeyer Gardens, and I will talk to you again soon. And meanwhile, I am not going to stagger, thanks to you, around the garden center when I go look for my subjects for pots.
Well, that's fun.
Bye-bye, Timothy. I'll talk to all the rest of you next week. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe free on Stitcher or iTunes to the podcast version. You can find me anytime on awaytogarden.com or at facebook.com/awaytogarden. Now go out and get good stuff for your pots.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.